Hi, and welcome back to Give Us Morg. I'm Neve, and normally I would be joined by Megan, but Megan's off living a once-in-a-lifetime experience in Malta, so for now, it's just me. You can check us out on Twitter at Give Us Morg and on Instagram at Give Us Morg for new updates on new episodes and other cool stuff that we do. If you would subscribe to us on whatever platform you're listening to this on, it would mean the absolute world to us. And if you really wanted to, you could leave us a review and we would really love that and really appreciate that. And if you do leave us a review, make sure to screenshot it and send it to us in a DM on Instagram so that we can give you a shout out on the next episode. As a PSA, these episodes are pre-recorded, so if you give us a shout out in between the last episode and this episode and you don't get a shout out, that's why. Okay, so I'm going to be talking about the Irish Vanishing Triangle. The Irish Vanishing Triangle is a series of disappearances with no or very little evidence that took place in the mid to late 90s. 8 women, ranging in all age, disappeared within an 80-mile radius, which is roughly the boundaries of Leinster. There are many theories as to what happened to these women, but the most popular theory is that there was a serial killer active in Ireland at this time. I'm going to tell you about each of the women's disappearances, and at the end, I want you to decide if you think there was a serial killer active in Ireland around this time, or if you think it's just one big giant quinky dink. I just want to give out a quick PSA before I jump right into the missing girls. None of this is my personal opinion, unless I'll let you know it's my personal opinion. Most of it is research that I have just done and found, and it is the most common opinion. And also, some of the women that went missing, there was kind of lesser known articles about them, so it was hard to get information on them and on their disappearances. So some are more in depth than others. So the first woman that went missing is Annie Bridget McCarrick. She was born on March 21st, 1967 in Long Island, New York. Her parents were John and Nancy McCarrick. They were of Irish descent, and Annie's parents said that from a young age that their daughter was just obsessed with her heritage. Annie moved to Dublin in 1986 to study at St. Patrick's, or more commonly known as St. Pat's College, to be a teacher. When she graduated, she moved back home to Long Island. But in 1993, Annie decided that she wanted to move back to Dublin. She just loved living in Ireland, and she decided that she just wanted to live here permanently. Jameen, I cannot blame her. Our autumn-winter weather is just to die for. Sorry, Megan, I know you're missing it. Annie was described as bubbly and a ray of sunshine by her friends. She lived with two roommates, Ida and Jill, in Sandymount. Annie still wanted to become a teacher, so she began taking classes here to get her certification so she could teach in Irish schools. Annie got herself a job at a local cafe until she was able to find a teaching job, just something to help pay the bills. Then on Friday, March 26th, 1993, Annie's two roommates were away for the weekend, and she decided that she was going to go to the Wicklow Mountains for the day. Before she could do any of that, she had to go into town and run some errands. So she was last seen on CCTV at a local AIB bank in Sandymount. She was then spotted at the local supermarket picking up a few bits of shopping. She then used a payphone to make some calls before she headed home. Annie got home and left her shopping on the countertops. Now, this is odd, as there were groceries that did need to be refrigerated, such as meat and milk. So people were a bit like, okay, why didn't she put her meat and milk in the fridge? Like, why wouldn't you do that? That's like one of the first things you do. Annie was then seen on the 44 bus to Enniskerry by one of her work friends. This is the last known sighting of her. After this, it is kind of all speculated. Annie is then said to be seen in a cafe at around 4 or 5 p.m. Then, between 9 and 11 p.m., a few people claimed to have seen her. A bouncer for a pub, Johnny Fox's, said he stopped her at the entrance as there was a fee of £2 to attend the pub's hoolie. The bouncer told Gardaí that there was a man behind her and he paid for her in, as she didn't realise that there was a fee. Other witnesses said that they seen her in the pub and that there was a man buying her drink all night. No one saw them leave together, but no one saw them leave alone either. However, a private investigator doesn't believe Annie was at the hoolie in Johnny Fox's, just because this meant that she would have had to walk in the rain and cold for over 6 kilometres along a pathless dark road. The next day, Saturday, March 27th, Annie didn't show up to collect her wages from work. Annie was also supposed to host a dinner party for two of her friends that evening, and when her two friends showed up at the apartment, Annie wasn't home. So they called Annie's mother to see if she had heard from her daughter, but she hadn't. Then on the Sunday, her two roommates came home from their weekend away, and Annie wasn't home, but her groceries were still sitting on the countertop from the Friday. Her parents got onto the next available flight to Ireland, and when they land, they went straight to the Gardaí to report their daughter as missing. By this stage, though, it had been over 48 hours since the last known sighting of her, which is the bus. Annie was last seen wearing a tweed jacket, cowboy boots, and a tan-coloured shoulder bag. Annie's parents stayed in Ireland for a little while to try help look for her. The missing persons case was then changed to a murder case, despite any known evidence for this. However, it is unlikely that she is alive. There are many theories as to what happened to Annie. She had told friends that she'd let things go a bit too far with an old fling. When the Gardaí asked the guy about this, he initially lied, which is very odd, but he did come clean and he said that his reason for lying the first time was because he didn't want his girlfriend to find out. Another theory is that a former IRA member who was at some point identified as the man who had paid for Annie into Johnny Fox's had killed her. He reportedly was banned from Northern Ireland for raping another IRA member's 12-year-old daughter and was then banished from the Republic shortly after Annie's disappearance, and it's believed that he went to America. The theory is that he tried to impress Annie by telling her that he was part of the IRA and tell her some of his stories, and this made Annie uncomfortable, so he killed her so that she couldn't tell anyone about the things that he had done. Annie is still missing to this day. The next woman to have gone missing is Eva Brennan, who was born August 4th, 1953 in Rathgar, Dublin. Her parents were David and Eileen Brennan, and Eva lived in an apartment on her own in Terenure, Dublin. Eva was close with her family and she would have lunch with them almost every day. She was last seen on July 25th, 1993, after she had finished having lunch up with her parents. Her father then went round to her apartment after she failed to show for lunch 2 days in a row and she hadn't called them. When Eva failed to answer the door, her father broke into her home. There he found her coat that she had been wearing the day she disappeared. So this meant that Eva at some stage did make it home. The Gardaí didn't take her disappearance very seriously at first. There was a theory that she knew a man who was convicted of murdering two women and that he was responsible for Eva's disappearance. However, her sister claims that it is very unlikely that Eva knew this man. Eva's family have criticised the Gardaí's treatment of her case and she is still missing to this day. The next woman to have gone missing was Imelda Keenan, who was born on March 21st, 1971 in Mount Merrick, Laois. Imelda then moved to Cove, Cork, to stay with one of her brothers, but that didn't work out so well, so she ended up moving to Waterford City. She ended up staying with two other brothers. Imelda was studying computers at Central Technical Institute of Waterford. She then moved into an apartment with her boyfriend, Mark Wall. On January 3rd, 1994, Imelda told her boyfriend that she was going to the post office. She left the house at around 1:30 p.m. and was last seen by a friend and one other person crossing the road. Imelda was never seen again, and there is not much information on her case. However, she is still missing to this day. Then, Josephine Jojo Dullard was born January 25th, 1974 in Callan, Kilkenny. Her father died shortly before she was born, and then her mother passed away when she was only 12 years old. Jojo had moved to Harold's Cross in Dublin and was studying beauty therapy. Jojo decided to drop out of her course as she found it hard to juggle it and work. So Jojo left her job and decided that she wanted to move back home to Callan. She'd signed up for the Dole, which is Ireland's unemployment benefit, when she then got a job at a restaurant in Callan. On November 9th, 1995, Jojo travelled up to Dublin to sign herself off the Dole. And she had to travel to Dublin because that's where she had signed up for it. Jojo had missed her last bus home from Dublin when she had bumped into an ex-boyfriend. The two decided that they were going to book a hotel room for the night, but the ex-boyfriend's new girlfriend found him in the pub with Jojo and he left with his girlfriend. Jojo decided not to use the hotel room and decided that she was going to take a bus to Naas, Kildare, as that was the direction of Callan. Jojo was then going to hitchhike the rest of her way home. A man picked her up and was able to bring her as far as Kilcullen, and from there she was able to get another lift as far as Moon. This man dropped Jojo off at a phone booth in Moon at around 11:30 p.m. Jojo used the payphone to call her roommate, Mary Cullinan, to let her know that she was still some distance from home and also told her her plan of hitchhiking. Witnesses claimed seeing Jojo half in the phone booth on the payphone and half out trying to hitch a lift all at the same time. While on the phone, she managed to get a lift, telling Mary, "Hold on, I've got someone." This was the last time that she was heard from. A witness seen Jojo get into the back seat of a car on the passenger side. So this meant that there was most likely two or more people already inside the car. Another person claimed to see her walking along the road in Castledermot, Kildare. However, that has never been confirmed to be her. The next day, she didn't show up for work, and the following day, Jojo's roommate, Mary, rang Jojo's older sister to find out where she was. Her sister rang Gardaí to report her as missing, but the Gardaí didn't really take it serious at first, and Jojo's sister had to fight for them to open up a missing persons case. The Gardaí eventually began to ask local farmers if they had seen Jojo, and they began searching along the roads, but they found nothing. The two men who had given her a lift to Kilcullen and to Moon came forward with what little information that they did have. Whoever was the last person to pick Jojo up in Moon was most likely the last person to see her alive, and responsible for her death. In 1997, a taxi man came forward and said that on the night of Jojo's disappearance, he was driving home at around 1 a.m. and he saw a car pulled over on the side of the road. He said the driver was out urinating behind the car and he saw a young woman jump out of the back of the car on the passenger side and she began running. Another guy got out of the car and the driver of the car began chasing her. They caught her and they threw her back into the back seat of the car before they sped off down the road towards Waterford. In 2019, the case was reopened with the help of TRACE, which is Ireland's cold case operation. Jojo is still missing to this day. Fiona Pender was born in July 1971. To her parents, Josephine and Sean Pender. Fiona was living in an apartment with her boyfriend, John Thompson in Tullamore, Offaly. The pair had previously lived in London and they weren't long home. Fiona was 7.5 months pregnant when she was last seen on August 23rd, 1996 by her boyfriend. John was leaving to go to work on his family's farm for a few days and he said that Fiona was awake lying in bed when he left. The day before, she had been shopping for baby items with her mother and she made plans to spend the day with her mother the next day. When her mother showed up to the house, it was in darkness and the curtains were still drawn. Now, her mother figured that Fiona was probably asleep as she wasn't having an easy pregnancy. Later on that evening, her dad walked past the house and it was still the same, in darkness. And he found that strange because, like, it was the exact same as when the mother came along. The next day, when they still hadn't heard from Fiona, her parents decided to ring her boyfriend, John, to see if he knew where she was. John, too, could not get a hold of her and he had assumed that she was staying with her parents. So, in a panic, her parents decided to call the Gardaí and report her missing. The Gardaí were able to gain access to the apartment and found that there was no forced entry, meaning that Fiona either left willingly or knew who she was opening the door to. The Gardaí posted missing persons flyers everywhere and the news reported on Fiona's disappearance regularly. A man came forward and said that on the day Fiona disappeared, he witnessed two men carrying a large and bulky rug that was covering something and they threw it in the back of a car on the street that Fiona lived. Which, like, you didn't think that was weird at the time? Like, you see two men carrying a large and bulky rug covered in something and they throw it in the back seat of a car and off they go. And you're like, okay. Although, to be fair, would I call the garrison somebody if I thought it was weird? I don't know. Am I just cynical from all the true crime that I research? Possibly. Yeah, no, 100%. I'm too cynical. I'd be like, oh my god, there's a dead body there. And then it's probably just like a rolled up antique that they're trying not to destroy. On March 31st, 2000, Fiona's dad sadly committed suicide. His family said that it was due to the heartbreak of losing his daughter and unborn grandchild. Then, on May 10th, 2008, someone was walking along the Monachnew Woods in Slievebloom Way. On the walk, they found a homemade cross that was engraved with, quote, Fiona Pender, buried here October 22nd, 1996, end quote. The Gardaí searched the Slievebloom Mountains extensively with specialists to examine the body, but they never found her. Some people think that it was just a mean prank. However, the date on the cross matches with a traumatic event that happened to one of the persons of interest. The Gardaí also felt that the handwriting on the cross was very unique. On July 9th, 2013, the town of Tullamore named a walkway Fiona's Way in honour of Fiona. And in 2014, the Gardaí reopened the case when a woman from Canada, who had lived in Ireland at the time of Fiona's disappearance, claimed her husband was responsible. Her husband tried to organise a violent sexual assault against her and threatened to kill her. He told her that he was responsible for Fiona's death and told her where he buried Fiona. He was already somebody that the Gardaí were interested in. Despite this information, they still never found Fiona's body, and she is still missing to this day. Before I go any further, I'm just going to take a quick ad break. I want to give a quick shout out to Andy Levy, who wrote a bomb-ass comic called Osaka Meme. If you are into crime, supernatural thrillers, and or anime, this is right up your street. Carl described it as a supernatural noir, which I think is really cool, and it's a really cool premise. Andy is a good close friend of Carl's, and we are super proud that he wrote an unreal comic and is published by Behemoth Comics. And I cannot wait to see what Andy does next, because it's just going to get better from here. Unfortunately, there are no physical copies of the comic at this moment in time until the reprint, which will be next year. But you can buy digital copies on Comixology or Amazon. So if you're into comics and you're into supernatural noirs, please go check out Osaka Meme. It's unreal. And we're back. Ciara Breen was born March 31st, 1979 in Dundalk, Louth. She was only 17 years old when she went missing on the night of February 13th, 1997. At around 1 a.m, Ciara's mother, Bernadette, went to go check on her daughter, and she wasn't in her bed. The sitting room window had been left slightly ajar, so Bernadette had assumed that Ciara snuck out to meet up with her friends. Bernadette stayed up to try and catch her daughter sneaking back in, but she didn't. That morning, Bernadette woke up at 9 a.m. and found Ciara was not home. Unfortunately, her parents couldn't stay at home, as they had an important hospital appointment in Dublin. It was at this appointment that Bernadette would find out that she had cancer and was going to need treatment. When they returned home later that evening, Ciara was still not home. They decided to call Gardaí and report her missing. The case was taken very seriously, as she was just a minor, and the Gardaí were very concerned, as there was a gang of paedophiles living in the Dundalk area that was trying to lure children and teens into sex trafficking situations. The group of teens that were being preyed on were some of Ciara's friends. There was also a local woman that was forcing young girls into prostitution. Gardaí didn't suspect Ciara was involved with any of this, but feared that she could easily be a target. The Gardaí did a forensic sweep of the house and found that the sitting room window was open from the inside, meaning that Ciara did sneak out. They also found Ciara's house keys behind the radiator under the window, which indicates that she lost her keys, but shows that Ciara did plan on coming home. The Gardaí interviewed all of Ciara's friends, asking if anyone saw her with someone leading up to that night, but nothing really came of those interviews. Then, in 1999, Trace went back through the interviews and discovered that the day before her disappearance, Ciara and her friends were hanging out in a local chip shop when an older man joined them. This was a regular occurrence, and Ciara's friends found the man creepy, but said that Ciara really liked him. He had asked Ciara to hang out that night that she disappeared, and she made plans to sneak out. The Gardaí eventually arrested the man in September 1999 in connections to another crime. Whilst in custody, the Gardaí interviewed him about his connection to Ciara for 12 hours, but he denied ever knowing her. The Gardaí, though, didn't believe him, as at the time of her disappearance, spray painted on a wall near her house was "His name loves Ciara." However, the Gardaí had to let him go due to their lack of evidence. In 2014, two witnesses came forward saying they saw Ciara near a marsh area the night she disappeared. The Gardaí also received two letters stating that they should check that same marsh area. In 2015, they began searching the area, but they never found anything. And to this day, Ciara is still missing. Then Fiona Sinnott was born 1979 and had a very close relationship with her family. While in an abusive relationship with a man named Sean Carroll, she got pregnant with a little girl, Emma. Fiona eventually broke up with Sean and moved into her own house with their 11-month-old Emma in Broadway, Southwest Wexford. On the night of February 8, 1998, Fiona left Emma with Sean's parents for the weekend. She felt that it was important for them to have a relationship with their granddaughter, despite what was going on between her and Sean. Which, you know, snaps and claps for her, because fair play for being like, whatever is going on between me and you shouldn't affect our daughter's relationship with your parents. She then went to the local pub, Butler's, with three of her friends. Throughout the night, her friends noticed that Fiona kept wincing in pain, and when they asked her about it, she told them that her arms and chest were in pain, but that is all she would say on the matter. While Fiona and her friends were having a good time, Sean, Fiona's ex, arrived and sat at the bar drinking by himself. Now, I was listening to like other podcasts and like other and articles and stuff on it, and they weren't Irish articles, like they weren't Irish newspapers that were like reporting it. And they were like, that's so weird. Like, why would you just sit at the bar by yourself? It is very common, okay? It's very common on like a Friday or Saturday night for a man to go to the pub by himself and sit at the bar and have a few pints and then go home, okay? Happens all the time. My dad used to do it on a Friday evening after work. He'd go to the pub, have a few drinks, and then he'd come home. And it was like, that was his me time. So if you're not Irish and you're like, what the frick, that's so weird, it's really not. It's really super normal. Okay, moving on. The pair didn't say hello to each other, but later on that night, Fiona left the pub with her friends and she said that she was going to walk home, as her house wasn't at all far from the pub. She waved goodbye to her friends, and Sean was then seen leaving the pub shortly after Fiona. A taxi man eventually came forward and said that that night he could hear a couple arguing at the side of the road near where Fiona lived, and at around the same time, someone heard a woman screaming. Sean claims that he walked Fiona home and he slept on the couch as he was worried about her because she was complaining of chest and arm pains. Fiona promised him that she was going to go to the doctors the following Monday. Sean then said that the following morning came around, his mother came, picked him up at 9 a.m, and when he left, Fiona was awake and he gave her £3 towards her doctor's fee. Sadly though, Fiona was never seen again. She was close with her family, but they didn't talk every day, and because of this, it wasn't until February 18th that she was reported missing, after her family began to worry, and she'd never gone that long without talking to them. So she was last seen on February 8th, and her family, because like they didn't talk every day, they wouldn't see each other every day, that it was 10 days later that she's reported missing. Now I know what you're thinking, but didn't she drop the daughter off at the ex's parents' house for the weekend and like be like, I'll be back on Monday? Yes she did. So her family have reported her missing. They're like, okay, we don't normally go 10 days without talking to each other, like that's a long time, I'm gonna ring the Gardaí. Neither Sean or his parents ever made any attempts to find out where Fiona was or why she never came to collect Emma, her 11-month-old daughter. The Gardaí went to Fiona's house to search it and found that the house had been emptied and cleaned out, with no personal items inside. The Gardaí commented that it didn't look like a 19-year-old and her 11-month-old ever lived here. But the landlord came forward and told police that he had been inside the house, and Fiona had many bits and pieces all around the house. She had many different trinkets and different ornaments, and the child had loads of toys, so it was very weird that the house was practically emptied. The Gardaí didn't find any sign of forced entry into the house or any signs of foul play. Sean Carroll kept custody of Emma and very rarely lets Fiona's family see her, which would have gone against Fiona's wishes. The Gardaí checked in with Fiona's doctor and other doctor surgeries in the area to see if she ever went to get checked up on the pains that she was experiencing, but she never did. The Gardaí then released the information to the public in the hopes of people coming forward, and it was somewhat successful. A farmer came forward after he saw the story on the news, saying that a few days before he had learnt of Fiona's disappearance, while out feeding his cattle, he came across several black bin bags abandoned on his property. The farmer had assumed that it was someone illegally dumping on his grounds, as this had happened to him before. He gathered up all the bags, checked them to make sure none of them contained anything of value. He said he noticed a medicine bottle with the name Fiona Sinnott on it, and then the farmer burnt them all to get rid of them. So sadly, any evidence that might have helped the case in what happened to Fiona was burned away. Now, we won't get mad at this farmer because, you know what? We've all done it, okay? Well, no, we haven't, but it's a very common thing for farmers to do. And it is also common for people to illegally dump on farms and in big fields. So we won't get mad at him for burning it, okay? Because he's stuck with it. What is he going to do with it? The Gardaí then learned of an English lorry driver that Fiona had spent the night with. While on a weekend away with her friends sometime before her disappearance, she met a lorry driver and she spent the night with him in the cab of his lorry. While there, the lorry driver told Gardaí that a man, assumed to be Sean, arrived and started banging on the doors of the lorry, demanding that Fiona get out and come home with him. The lorry driver told Gardaí that Fiona was petrified of whoever was outside that door banging it, and she wouldn't go with him. In a rage, the man did eventually leave, but Fiona was petrified. The Gardaí theorised that if it was Sean, the night she went missing, he saw an opportunity to get revenge for humiliating him on her weekend away by not going home with him. They think he killed her and got his friends to help him empty her home and dispose of her body and make it look like she had ran away. Gardaí eventually arrested Sean and some of his friends on drug charges and used this opportunity to question them on the disappearance of Fiona. But none of them would answer as it was not related to their charges. In September 2008, on the 10th anniversary of her disappearance, to mark the occasion, her family organised a ceremony and they were going to unveil a plaque in her honour in Our Lady's Island Cemetery. However, someone sadly stole her plaque. Gardaí think that it was possibly robbed by her killer or at the request of her killer, and they don't want to be reminded of what they did. Whoever stole her plaque, shame on you, you disgusting dirtbag. Her family are just trying to mourn their missing daughter and sister and mother and, you know, have some respect, you pieces of shit. The Gardaí were then on the verge, they felt, of cracking a member of Sean's inner circle into telling them what had happened to Fiona. He, however, sadly overdosed before he could tell them anything. Fiona is still missing to this day. Deirdre Jacob was born October 14th, 1979. She was 18 years old and she was living in Twickenham, London. She was studying at St Mary's University, but Deirdre had come home to Newbridge, Kildare for the summer break in 1998. On July 1998, Deirdre was last seen at about 3 p.m. walking towards her front gate of the family home. 8 to 10 people confirm seeing her walking the road as she's heading towards town to run some errands. When Deirdre's mother arrived home from work at 6 p.m, she was a little concerned to find that her daughter wasn't home, but she waited until 7 p.m. when her husband came home from work. Then the pair decided to call the Gardaí to report their daughter is missing. Gardaí began searching immediately and people began calling in sightings of Deirdre, but most were not helpful. One sighting, however, Gardaí found very interesting. A truck driver rang a local radio station several times to say that he had picked Deirdre up on the side of the road the day she disappeared as she was hitchhiking. He said he had pulled over to make sure that she was okay and he happened to be going in the direction she was looking to go. He claimed to have dropped her off in Carrickmacross and he would not identify himself. So Gardaí released the audio from the radio of this man's voice, as it was a very distinctive voice. And people quickly called in to identify the man as someone who was living in Fermanagh. As he lived over the border in Northern Ireland, Gardaí could not just extradite him without charges and because they didn't have jurisdiction in Northern Ireland. Through sources, they found out that the truck driver went into Monaghan to do his weekly food shop, so Gardaí waited for him to cross the border. And as soon as he did, they brought him in for questioning. While he was being interviewed, he admitted to being the caller, but came clean that he had made the whole story up. He told Gardaí that he had lost his daughter in an accident that he was somewhat responsible for, and he knew the pain. He thought if he could give Deirdre's family hope that she was still alive, then they would never feel his pain. Deirdre's mother and sister weren't angry at this truck driver, but they were actually concerned for his well-being and his mental health. Like, angel people. Absolute angel people. You know how good of a person you have to be that you're in distraught because your sister and your daughter is missing. And this man has made up a story that he picked her up and brought her to Carrickmacross. And he's like, sorry, I lied because I lost my daughter and I didn't want her parents to feel the pain I felt. You know how good you have to be to not be angry and just be like, wow, this man needs help. Like, obviously his mental health is not good. Angel people. The case went quiet after this until about a year and a half later when another young woman had been sexually assaulted near where Deirdre was last seen. The young girl was sexually assaulted by, we won't name who, but if you're from Ireland you probably know who, but I'm not saying his name. In 2001, this man was serving time for abduction, sexual assault and attempted murder in Arbour Hill Prison. It is a common thing that in this prison the inmates get kitchen privileges and they would often use this to make their own vodka. And then this would lead them to spilling on some of the crimes that they have committed. So, while at prison, this man did just that. He told another inmate, who remains unnamed, that in the summer of 1998, he abducted a young woman, raped and then killed her before hiding her body. He said that he had spotted a girl walking alone on a country road, the same road Deirdre was last seen on, and he pulled over pretending to need directions. When the girl got close enough to the car, he pulled her in through the window by the hair and then hit her over the head with a hammer and then sped off with her stuck upside down in the passenger side of his car. He took the girl to a secluded area, raped her and then murdered her and then disposed of her body. Gardaí believed that this young woman was Deirdre. Trace went to speak to the inmate that this man told his story to clear up that by telling the Gardaí this information, it would not affect his sentence. He was serving life in prison and that would never change even if he told them this story. The inmate said he understood and he said that he wanted to tell Gardaí this story that he was told, because he has a daughter and that he didn't want this man free in the same country as his child. The Gardaí, ever since, have been watching this man really closely, but sadly they've never ever had enough evidence to arrest him. In 2019 and in 2020, the Gardaí were very interested in this man as a suspect, but they didn't have enough evidence. It's theorised that this man may be responsible for more than just Deirdre's murder. However, Deirdre is still missing to this day. So no one has ever been brought to justice, and these 8 women still remain missing today. If you have any information on what happened to them, please do not hesitate to call your local Garda station. So that's the Irish Vanishing Triangle. What do you think? Do you think that there was an axe murderer? Jesus. Do you think there was a serial killer in Ireland at the time? I don't know what I believe. I think the last man that I was talking about very well could be responsible for most of those women. And I don't want to say his name for like legal purposes and stuff like that, because this did happen very close. Like Newgrange is not far from me at all. However, Fiona Pender's ex-boyfriend 100% killed her for custody of his kid. I'm sorry. Because you're telling me that you're not at all concerned about your ex when she doesn't show up to collect your child? You're telling me that that never concerned you? Suspish. Okay, so it was really nice chatting with you guys about this case. We will be back next week with a brand new other episode. And if you haven't done so already, check out some of our other episodes. Last week, I talked about the Black Dahlia. If you want to follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at GiveUsMorgue for updates on new episodes and other cool stuff that we do, we sometimes post our TikToks there. You can do that at GiveUsMorgue. If you want to follow our own personal Instagrams, that's also cool. Mine's at Mrs_Neve and Megan's is at MegPowell_. If you want to subscribe to us on whatever device you're listening to this on, that would really be super appreciated. And if you wanted to leave us a review, that would mean the absolute world. If you do leave us a review, screenshot it, send it to us in a DM, and we'll give you a shout out on the next episode. As a PSA, this episode is pre-recorded, and so if you do so after this episode and don't get a shout out in the next one, very sorry, that is why. But keep listening and your name will pop up eventually. And also guys, make sure to check out Osaka Meme, which is a comic written by one of Carl's close friends, and it is so good, like a supernatural noir, which I think is just so cool, so unique and so fun. So if you love crime, thrillers and the supernatural, Osaka Meme is for you. Published by Behemoth Comics, and you can download your digital copy on Comixology and or Amazon. Okay, we'll talk to you later guys. Bye.